So welcome back to Pax Europiana. Now about the economic part and economic reform part. Why it's so important to reform our economies, to increase the prosperity differential in the Cold War, in the second Cold War we are in, and what to do to in general have better prosperity, higher growth, and better living standards for all Europeans. But all the things I will say are also valid everywhere globally in the economic reform debate. And I want to start it first again with strategic security as the most important element of economic reform. You will say, how is that connected? Well, it's absolutely very strongly connected. And I will make it clear with the example of NATO membership in Central and Eastern Europe, and also explain that NATO is very much the cornerstone of prosperity and economic reform. Why, you will say? Now, let me outline that NATO, first of all, is not only a defense alliance, but also a value community. It's a political community of democracies. It's a community of similar-minded countries with a certain set of ideas and concepts about the individual, the society, the economy. And this matters very much for the question, how much growth can a society develop? How much prosperity can be achieved? And it's basically also in many ways re-import of European ideas via America, via the NATO to Western Europe and now Central Europe. And this is a bit the history in many aspects, but NATO really matters very much for prosperity. I give you some proof of this. For example, see the differences between Romania and Moldova. Romania in NATO since 2004 and later 2007 in the European Union, and Moldova. The prosperity is differential is really very striking. It's about $12,000 GDP per capita in Romania. That's quite an achievement. Obviously, it's only one third of the European average. And it's only one sixth, maybe, of the US situation. But given where Romania was just 15 years ago, it's unbelievable. And compared to Moldova, which is quite a similar country, at some stages in history they were united, Moldova and Romania. The population is quite similar, the history, the geography, all the parameters which matter for economic development, land, people, geography, natural resources, all quite similar. And Moldova is now at $3,000 GDP per capita. So it's quite a striking difference of four times. You can make the same comparison also with Poland and Ukraine, which are also from geography, people, history, relatively similar countries. When you go to Poland, it looks quite similar like Ukraine. Obviously, there's now some different visibility of development in Poland. But the basic fundamentals are very much the same. Or look at the most striking example for me is the comparison between the three Baltic states and Moldova, Ukraine, and Georgia, which also broke away at the same time at the end of 91 from the Soviet Union. But the Baltic states in NATO, EU, Euro are now in six times richer, six times. We are talking about six times richer than Ukraine and Georgia, Moldova. Georgia is a bit better, but six times richer than Ukraine and Moldova. And this is kind of a big differential already in just such a period. Of course, you can always say they were also differently developed in the past, in history, and there can be also made the argument that also the EU matters and also the euro matters. Absolutely, the EU matters and absolutely the euro matters. But the EU and the euro are a result of American-backed peace in Europe organized by NATO. And this is not that the EU was first and then NATO. It was NATO first, and NATO provided this nuclear umbrella under which we all live securely, and actually, all who are NATO members. And sadly, Ukraine doesn't live in security due to this fact that it is unfortunately not a member. And so this matters a lot for prosperity. Absolutely, it matters. So let me also come to the fundament, how security is connected to prosperity and how prosperity depends on security, because that's an important link to understand. Development in generally is a question of time and investment of your own capacities, meaning your work, your ideas, your capital, which you have as a result of your investment and of your capacities. And then you do it over time and you increase. Yeah? You build your house, let's call it a house, or your house is the best example. I think this makes it very clear why it depends, why security depends on prosperity. If in a constant insecurity, does it make sense to build a big house? No, because you never know when you will be attacked and somebody will rob you. So you live in a tent because you are flexible. You can run away. You can hide yourself. You are just, you know, you have all your belongings with you. You may be living somewhere else next month because somebody chased you away. So in the situation of insecurity, people are simply nomads and they take their belongings with them. And only in the situation where you have security, you gradually think that you can build something on this land because you think you can defend it. And that's basically the link between prosperity and security. And in a bigger picture, it makes also much more sense that you invest in the future of your country, of your region, of your city, when you feel that you will be living here most likely the next 20 years. Maybe even your children will live here and it will make a lot of sense. And then you say, okay, I don't consume everything now. I don't have to carry everything with me. I don't have to spend a lot of time on my defense. I can really do productive activities and build something, invest in a business, build something up. And so security and prosperity mutually reinforce themselves over time. And when there is the institutional framework also there, and everybody sees this prosperity relatively secure, then obviously you can also lend money from friends or family or from institutions, which think, okay, I can give this gentleman or this lady 20 years now from the future, and now already the money to build his house or his business. And then it makes a lot of sense because the institutions are there, the security, the trust. And then you can take a mortgage, you can take a loan, and you can build your house already now and not save all the money until the moment you have enough or have to build it with your own hands and no time for doing your other business. And so this is basically the basic connection between security and prosperity. I hope you forgive me for my maybe simplistic house metaphor. But this is actually what it all depends on. If you don't have security, who will invest? And if you don't invest, who will have some kind of profitability, new generation of technologies, new risky undertakings in the economy, or who will build bigger houses for his family? Yeah? I mean, you have then to spend a lot of money on the walls in the start. Yeah? And this is all the issue basically about security. And in the bigger picture, you need to see that it makes a big difference if you can trust long-term that you will be secure, that you can calculate over your own lifespan, that you know that you will be not somehow drafted in a war, you will not be required to fight for your own property, you can really focus not on your defense, but on your prosperity, and with it, the prosperity of all involved, and everybody ultimately. This is the way economies lift themselves up, and therefore security is so important. And you can see so many countries in the world where this basic security is not provided, and then also the conditions are much more bent on survival instead of investment. And that's obviously then creating very low levels of outcome in GDP. And that's, of course, a major issue. So I have explained that metaphor, but it's then when you translate it in the small, medium enterprises, in a domestic company. So you have a retail shop. know, when you have always intrusions from the authorities, many inspections and arbitrary, corruptive kind of racketeering around, then you will try to make it not too big, not create any intention, not to be too successful, because you will anyhow have a lot to do to fend off all these kind of racketeerings, either from the security service, from the political world, or from the mafia world. And this will be very complicated, and you will try to hide everything, not to be too successful. And this, of course, keeps the society pretty much down. And the same is true, and here to the bigger picture again, for foreign direct investment. Look, imagine you are an investor, let's say from America. Do you prefer to invest in a NATO country, or do you prefer to invest in a country where everybody loves Putin or is very enthusiastic about Iran? And let's make this example. And then you think you can invest in Romania or in Moldova, in Poland or in Ukraine or in Belarus. And then you decide, or you think, and you're mostly not alone as a decision maker. You have to justify your position to your board, to your shareholders, to your fellow managers, to your competitors, maybe in the company. And then you say, I really have this great opportunity. I can go to, let's say, Belarus, because they have great people, great land. I know the people there. This will be wonderful. But with all investments in a foreign country, and there's not only the business risk, but also the political risk to consider. What happens, for example, in the, let's say, in the extreme case, in the case of war? Will my property, my investment, my industrial site, my logistics center, will it be destroyed, or will it no longer be accessible? And look, for example, if a manager had said, I will go to Ukraine, I will go to Eastern Donbass, and I will invest there, then you have since 2014 maybe no access anymore, or you have to buy your access with some corruptive networks of some mafia clans who have taken control of your industrial site. And so you lost it, or you have a huge additional cost to somehow get your capital out, or at least minimize your losses. And that's the ultimate political risk of war damages. But there is also, there might be a political change in a country where suddenly then nationalization is on the agenda, or expropriation, or the new government wants to have again some kind of corruptive offer in order to let you do your business, which you have already invested in. And maybe you bought the other guy's offer, and then the new guys want something else again. And so you are in a completely mess. And that's why this is this huge risk in foreign direct investment. But if you do it in a friendly state, allied with America, in a NATO country, where there is basic political security, even in a change of government, you always then have, obviously, then also this informal way, not only going to the courts, which also might be very corrupt in some countries and often are, but you can also go to your embassy and maybe ask, I'm Austrian, for example, maybe you have some meetings with the British or American ambassador who are more influential, and can you raise our issues as well, because we were treated very unfairly by the new government. And so you have some kind of political network where you can maybe defend your investment which you made. And this you might not lose your investment, or you might be recovering it, or you might also continue to invest in that country because you think that the risk is much, the political risk is much smaller in a NATO ally. And so it really matters very much for small, medium companies, domestic investors, but also for the big international companies who might invest in infrastructure, energy projects, or banking sector, or whatever kind of steel company, mining project. The political risk always has to be considered, and always is a major issue. And that's why in a country which is a member of the Western Value and Defense Alliance, and with it is also then allied with the West, obviously there's more security, less risk, and that means also less costly investments. Yeah? That is also resulting in many of the international mechanisms, because these investments are often insured. when a country is very insecure, then there is a high risk premium and nobody will maybe fund your and finance your investment. When it's seen as a NATO member, when it's seen as an ally, then the risk premium, the risk evaluation is dropping to a lower level. And then it makes more sense to fund such an investment. And you will find a banking sector which says, okay, Poland, yes. Lithuania, less. Ukraine, maybe. And that means that you have to put more of your own equity into such an investment, which makes the whole investment much more costly in the return calculations, and you will reconsider maybe, or your board will not approve it. And so it's very much connected, the question of security, economic development, and alliance system. You either want to be a member or you are a member already, that's of course the best, but wanting to be a member of the Western world, of the Western alliance system, or being an ally of America, obviously is economically much more beneficial than being somehow allied with a rogue regime or a regime which is hostile to the Western world. And also, very concretely, it might also be physical destruction. You know, in a war-related situation, your company might be shelled, your employees might be taken hostage, and all these things might happen. So it's important to have physical security, and that means also, ultimately, this whole issue about defense. And I would like also, it's not the most important topic, but it's also defense itself is an industry. And also that means that when you are in NATO, obviously it means economically that your defense sector is more, is better organized, is more rationally structured, is also in a way supervised or at least assisted, not to have too much corruption, not to have too much spying by other nations, and maybe the taxpayers are better protected from all this collusion, which is so often one of the biggest problems in a defense in the defense industry, because there is only one buyer normally, or the state has to help to export this politically. So the whole system is hugely prone for corruption. And that's obviously also a cost for the whole society. And so also the defense sector rationalization, better organization of the defense industry, and all these things which NATO also does in the intelligence sector and all this important sector, the civil, military and defense industry relation, these are all important things for higher prosperity, and they have a major long-term impact. So I talked about physical security, about the political risk, and let's talk a little bit also about the spirit of community. Because imagine, you know, when you know the future is secure, and when you know you belong to a bigger alliance, this matters very much for a small country, which small countries are always at risk for the neighbors to be bullied, to be told what to do, and to somehow be insecure about their future. And this kind of spirit of community, this spirit of an alliance, is already liberating for the people. It's liberating also then for the capital and for the investments, because everybody feels safer and everybody feels that long-term the future of my country is clear, because I'm a member of NATO. It's not only NATO, but in a way, I'm a member of a secure alliance. Yeah. The same is obviously true when you live, for example, inside China, obviously, because there is also quite a lot of security. But in authoritarian regimes, there is always this issue, ultimately, how close to power, maybe you are out of favor, you know, how stable is really China internally with all its multi-ethnic issues and so on and so on. And you have also, you can see very much the contrast also in Russia, where nothing is secure when you are not politically connected. And even that can change a lot. And if you see, for example, Navalny's Chaika movie, you see that actually the core of the state is so corrupt that they take control of key assets in the mineral and mining sectors, and they take it with all brutality of the general prosecutor and its attached kind of law enforcement groups, and there is no kind of remedy when the law enforcement and the state prosecutor office is basically a predatory, self-enriching unit in competition to the rest. And they are the law, they take what they want, they use all the means they can. And you see, and that's what I also call with a difference between a union of values, which is NATO, and the rule of the fist and the might is right principles, this jungle kind of economy, which has developed out of Russia and some other places. Very unfortunate. So the difference is really in the alliance system. And so it matters really very much if a country chooses NATO and is getting its act together also then institutionally. And with NATO, obviously, then all the sister organizations from OECD, the European Union, all the tools it has, all the regulatory alignment. Obviously, NATO is not offering the full package. Yeah? It's not one part of the system, but it's the ultimate upper umbrella, like the nuclear umbrella, if you like that comparison or not. But this is NATO, and this is NATO-backed security. Maybe in other parts of the world, alliance with America or with the European, with the free world, membership in OECD, and so there can be some substitutes. But ultimately, a partnership, also NATO, I want to remind, has also a global outreach program. It's not a full membership of the alliance, but it's called NATO Global Partnership, and which for all extents and purposes is a very good system for American and Asian and African countries also to align with NATO, but on a more looser basis. Not everybody has this mutual defense obligation of Article 5, because basically NATO is a defense alliance against aggression of hostile Russia, and it's not needed in a way, and it's also not to be expected that Brazil or South Africa now send forces to defend Poland and Estonia. I mean, they're all welcome in case, but anyhow, it's based on deterrence. Nobody will attack such a powerful alliance, and that gives a lot of security, and based on this security comes prosperity over time. And it's not the only thing, I'm not saying that, because I will say now 20 different aspects of economic progress, and they all matter. But the most important is, which alliance do you belong? Which value system do you belong? And where do you see a long-term future in a geostrategic sense? Do you want to be a part of the free world, of the NATO-backed free world order, and of NATO itself, if you are in the geography in Europe? And if that is the answer, basically that's already most of the rest of the decisions come then logically over time. And which tax level you choose and which level of collusion, state capture you allow, and that's basically then only the question how long the transformation and the progress to prosperity goes. Yeah, some put a lot of brake in because the political elite want to milk the system very hard in the beginning, or some are, you know, very much for redistribution. Then obviously the progress takes longer and is more complicated road. But the first and fundamental question is the long-term strategic security. And if that is answered, if that's a yes for NATO and the NATO-backed free world order, then basically everything will be good. I think that that will be the road to prosperity. And that's the first and most important question. Obviously, you will say, but there are also some EU members which are not in NATO. Look, security is not so, it's indivisible in a certain sense. Once Europe, free Europe is secured, then obviously the question, if a very small country like Ireland or Austria or Cyprus are now in NATO or not, it's a bit unsolidarity, anti-solidaric from them. It doesn't matter on the bigger picture, because you cannot divide the nuclear umbrella. You cannot divide the Mediterranean fleet in that sense. Yeah? Once you protect free Europe, all free Europe is protected. Yeah, And then the exact borders, of course, towards Russia, that might be very important ultimately, especially for the people who live there, no doubt about it. Yeah? But obviously, some kind of rewriting is always possible. That's what the Austrians and the Irish and the Maltese especially do. And it's not hurting the bigger picture, but it is not really nice. And when then others, like the French, for example, want to have the same, then it would be, of course, a fundamental problem. And it's always a big issue with the French and their vision of Europe, as you know. But nevertheless, they are in NATO and they are also in the NATO Security Alliance. And it's also one of the reasons why France has recovered so amazingly from the terrible destructions, which unfortunately were part of the Second World War. And ultimately, let's not forget why all these institutions were built, because of the terrible destructions of the Second World War. And this was, of course, the ultimate catastrophe in European history. And then you see how what is the effect from insecurity. When you then translate political and regional conflicts into an all-out total war, and the costs going into trillion, and the destruction complete, and then obviously you can, even in this maybe extreme example, you can see the difference between security and total chaos. And so maybe that's too negative a closing point. I say we have achieved this amazing feast now in the Cold War to survive the Soviet threat, and then later to go to these unprecedented levels of prosperity thanks to NATO. Thank you, USA, for staying and securing us since the Second World War and since the Atlantic Charter. Let's call it the spirit of the Atlantic Charter, which made all this prosperity possible for America and for free Europe, and with it, everybody else in the world who wanted to be part of it. And let's make sure this works for the very long term and is really stable and include more countries, and make sure our opponents and the hostile powers, which we unfortunately have, are secure in their estimation about our determination to defend our freedoms and also our prosperity and also what we have achieved and what we will achieve. And let's also be open for everybody else in the world who wants to be part of that amazing system backed by NATO. Yeah, that's the most important basis for prosperity. It's security, and this means a NATO-backed free Europe, and with it, a NATO-backed free world. So thanks a lot for the first part. The next one, I will talk about currency systems and their essential effect on prosperity. Thanks a lot.